If Wisconsin was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, like the flipped on its head,
sure.
What would things be made out of?
Cheese curd bushes.
Okay.
Right? So you can just pick cheese curds off the cheese curd bush.
Are cheese curds more of a fruit?
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin, and welcome to the noon hour, the lunch hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry. We got Jane Madnair keeping watch in downtown Waukesha. I can't see the road anymore. The snow is really coming down. And I am not going to waste any time introducing our guests because we have so much to talk about. But CJ Safer serves as the president of the Institute of Reforming Government. And how would you describe Institute for Reforming Government? Because I don't know if our listeners are familiar with your organization.
Kristen, how's it going? Thank you so much for having me. So I work at IRG. IRG is a policy organization in addition to its partner, IRG Action, which does advocacy. And look, we come from the center right. We advocate for policy solutions that embrace free markets and limited government and education reform. I joined IRG about 3 years ago. We've grown really, really quickly. I got a great team. And we do most of our work in state government with taxes and education and government spending. So as you can imagine, the day after the budget, this is like the Super Bowl for us, which is incredibly nerdy, given that there's like 10,000 pages of spending. It's a ton of fun, and I'm very happy to be here today.
Yeah, and I'm so happy for you to be here because I feel like often, and you and I have talked about this a lot, we met approaching a year ago because we were both, we crossed paths sometimes at WTMJ on Steve Scafidi's show, and I reached out because I'm constantly trying to have more people in my network to have conversations that don't just confirm my bias or my point of view, right? And so I think every time we've ever talked, it always felt like a really productive conversation. And so I'm so happy to finally get in your schedule and have you on the show, because especially on this subject, I feel like myself included, other hosts on this network listen to last night's budget and have a very distinct point of view as far as this funding so many things that we think sound important. And so being able to the day after have this conversation of like, when you sit there and you watch it, as all of us nerds did last night, what do you hear? And so I guess I'll just start it there as far as like, what was your initial reaction? Knowing that there was parts of the budget that were his proposal that were getting written about even before last night. But as far as kind of general gut reactions, what do you think?
Yeah, I think from mine and from the probably if you're from a center right point of view, we can talk about the reaction from Speaker Voss. But largely, like I think of when I grew up in politics, Bill Clinton, right, the Clinton administration, and their famous line that the era of big government's over, and how he actually, I know this is going to shock people today, but like we actually produced budgets at the federal level that shrunk the number of full-time employees, that spent less money than what we took in, and that actually ran surpluses. And then when I think of that, I really think of how this Evers budget is kind of like symbolic of where the Democratic Party is today. And if you are a fan of big government and a fan of big spending a lot of money, this budget's probably something you're going to like. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think this is going to be the frustration for a lot of people when you have a Republican legislature for whatever reason. These people here feel like they are elected and they ran on smaller government. They ran on cutting taxes. They ran on spending less money, and they really want to get stuff done. They're looking at this and saying, like, what do you want us to do, right? So it's a budget that spends $100 billion over 2 years, which is, we're going to talk about a lot of big numbers. No one can really conceptualize, trillions. So billions are not that much easier. But it's a 15% increase in spending over the previous budget that was enacted. I think that's going to be really difficult for some people to swallow when you think of how difficult a lot of families are having to budget when they see the headlines or when they see ads that are going to come and say, you know, our government wants to spend 15% more. We want to increase the number of full-time employees by over 800. I think it's just fascinating, again, thinking back to like the 90s, like Wisconsin, the size of Wisconsin state government, and this is now going to be bipartisan, the size of Wisconsin state government has doubled in the last 20 years. And
even under Walker?
This is something that's we've continued, the size of Wisconsin state government has continued to grow, mainly because it's really hard to get state spending under control. So when you have a budget that Evers produces, like I'm not going to come on your show and fake outrage and say that, you know, he's trying to shut the schoolhouse doors of private schools and school choice, which we can discuss.
We'll talk about that for sure.
Yeah, it's symbolic of where the Democratic Party is, and he's a Democrat governor who won re-election by a resounding, at least in Wisconsin. So I think this is something that reflects his priorities. But I think really, truly what shocked me and my team, even by the governor's standards, is just the amount of spending that they want to do. And I think that's going to be a real issue starting right now when the budget goes from the governor's desk to the legislature.
Well, and that's kind of where I started. And like you've been working, not obviously in government as much as through policy and stuff as far. And I've only come back in 2020. And so some of this, one of my questions was going to be, how did these compare to when Walker was doing his state of the states and stuff? But we'll get back to that. But it's like, how much of this is because of our divided government that the strategy is less that if I actually could wave a magic wand, this is what I would do versus I know you're not going to do most of what's in here anyways. And all you keep saying, you being the legislature, is you're going to scrap it and start over. And so might as well just throw out everything to let the people know where I stand on so much of stuff that I would fund if I could versus it being realistic. Because as we said before, what he threw out there is not a sustainable budget. It's like far, far beyond what we actually collect in tax revenue.
Well, that's a good point. That may be something that IRG is going to be reminding a lot of people starting on Friday, is like, it's not a sustainable budget. And, yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned that because, and look, this is, you know, for those that want to do transformational tax reform, these are also issues that we're dealing with. But like, you know, after all, you know, we're going to spend down the vast majority of the surplus under the governor's budget, right? So we have a surplus of over $7 billion, which will never happen in our lifetimes. And that's going to be about $6 billion of that is spent down in this budget. And then we're left wondering, because of the two-year budget, in 2025, well, something pretty much has to give for next budget, right? In order to maintain these spending levels, truly, one of two things is going to have to happen. We're going to have to raise taxes in 2025 by even more, or we're going to have to make deep cuts into spending and programs, which we already stipulated is just really, you know, both sides don't like to tackle that. So, yeah, I mean, I think Speaker Voss called it devoid of reality. And that's probably true. I mean, I think there's a lot in here that's just not going to happen. And look, I hate to be the person to come on the show and upset your listeners, but, you know, I got some bad news. The Republican legislature is not going to agree to repeal Act 10. They're not going to agree to repeal right to work. They're not going to increase the minimum wage. They're not going to agree to freeze the school voucher program. Not going to agree to Medicaid expansion, marijuana, which, you know, for good, bad, or indifferent for these things. It's just the reality. I mean, these Republicans are very deeply conservative. And they think that, you know, yes, the governor got elected, but they got elected too. And they didn't get elected by running on those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I guess one area where there was concession, but I'm assuming that you are going to say that there maybe should be more, is tax cuts. And so he started out, you know, basically after he made the joke about only marrying Kathy once, basically pretty quickly moved into tax cuts for the middle class. And so I know part of IRG's platform is eliminating income tax altogether, which is even a step further than the 3.5 flat tax. So as far as, is that at least a step in the right direction as far as what his proposal was in your point of view?
Well, look, I mean, I would prefer much deeper cuts. And I think that's what the legislature is going to push for. Look, you mentioned the state Senate will push a 3.5% flat tax, which we can discuss. The assembly, uncertain at the moment. But I think so the EVERS tax cuts, essentially a 10% tax cut for those that are making around $100,000 or less. Or some of these numbers are a little deceiving. 10% for some people is only going to be about a few hundred dollars. If you look at just the income tax part of it, this is actually technically a net tax increase of $182 million, just looking at the income tax, mainly because he does a lot to increase taxes on capital gains, increase taxes on manufacturers by decreasing their tax credit. It is a net tax cut for property taxes, but it's pretty targeted, the homestead credit, veterans credit, personal property tax. So I think the property tax part, I think a lot of that is going to be very appealing to conservatives. I think the income tax part, they're going to most likely send him something massive. Governor Evers is already on record saying he'd veto a flat tax. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where we'll see a showdown over the summer. And I would expect that they're going to meet somewhere in the middle. And I think it's going to be something, I would recommend something fairly dramatic for the middle class. I mean, Evers says a 10% tax cut, in my opinion, why don't we just get rid of the income tax for the middle class? And that, in my opinion, would be a step in the right direction and probably a little more transformational.
All right. Well, we have so much. We only scratched the surface. And so we're going to take a break right now. Our guest this half hour is CJ Safer, who serves as the president of the Institute for Reforming Government. When we come back, let's talk about where there is some compromise. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
I'm feeling so fly, like a cheesehead. Like a cheesehead, like a cheesehead. Now, I'm feeling so fly, like a cheesehead. Like a cheesehead, like a cheesehead. Now, I'm feeling so fly, like a cheesehead.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We are talking to CJ Safer, who is the president of the Institute for Reforming Government, on his takes from a center-right perspective on Governor Evers' biennial budget address last night. And so it's obvious, I think, to anyone who follows this, that there was going to be a lot that Republicans and Democrats did not agree on. But as far as issues that were brought up that you feel like there is room for compromise, and even issues that were brought up that are good ideas but maybe not funded in the level that he listed out, what did you identify some of those as being?
Well, if you're scoring at home, I think you look at, again, not to go back to the previous segment, but some of the things on taxes, especially the elimination of the personal property tax or the decrease of it. We talked about tax cuts for the middle class or some variation. I think, the Brewers is something that, I think is going to have bipartisan compromise. And I think Speaker Voss's initial reaction to the Brewers deal was, one of the criticism of the process. It seemed like he felt like he was out of the loop, but he also didn't really criticize the substance. So it does seem like there is a will to give the Brewers some sort of taxpayer money from the surplus for maintenance. And I think mental health. I think mental health is this, you know, to use the governor's line in his State of the State, he called 2023. He wanted it to be the year of mental health. And there's no question, everything from COVID, Republicans are acutely aware of schools and just all the issues from businesses being closed and all the mental health trauma that's accompanied that. You're going to see a real effort to try to get mental health services to people. I think there might be some disagreement on a number or what exactly that means, especially for schools. But I do think you're going to see a real emphasis there. Broadband, you know, one thing, my colleague, Madison Hartman, who's our director of external affairs, she spent most of 2022 traveling around the state, visiting 40 different cities and traveling over 5,000 miles, just getting to know people. And one of the things that we constantly heard when we were driving around the state was broadband, especially outstate. And it's so complex, but it is a common criticism when you get outside of Madison, when you get outside of Milwaukee. And I think a lot of your listeners are probably nodding that our broadband is really not what we should be having for the year 2023 to live in the United States of America. So when I look at the Evers budget, which I'm still trying to dissect, I know he's calling for $700 million to be put towards broadband, which is like, again, when you have a surplus of $7 billion and $700 million for broadband, like, that's a good chunk of change to go to broadband. The issue that I think conservatives are going to have that you're going to hear is, but wait a second, the Biden administration is touting the bipartisan infrastructure plan, and Wisconsin has about $1 billion that's allocated to come to our state for broadband. How do these two things mesh? But I think once we can have an adult conversation or sit around and kind of figure out where the money's going, I think you're going to see a real concerted effort in the final budget to increase broadband access, especially to parts of rural and small town Wisconsin.
One question, because then I want to at least touch on education. Do you think there's any appetite for paid leave? Because I know that was part of Tim Michaels mentioned that in his one of the debates.
Yeah, he did. I think paid leave is fascinating. I think the coverage in the Journal Sentinel pretty aptly describes it. I think there is some appetite amongst Republicans. I just think the issue Republicans have, I think, no, what does paid family leave mean, right? So we heard about it on the campaign trail. Evers put out a budget. It was paid family leave expansions for both public employees. But then he went one step further and put it on private employees too. Now he would fund it, as I understand it. He allocated about hundreds of millions of dollars to reimburse the employees for paid family leave of the private sector. The problem is going to be, though, that he can only guarantee that for a few years. And then I think the private sector and businesses, they're going to be upset. I would expect, because they're going to think that this is going to eventually become an unfunded mandate. So I'm not sure what the final one would look like, if there's even room for compromise. But I would kind of put it in that, maybe like that tier below of things that are like, maybe like similar to like marijuana. There's some growing support amongst the Republican caucus. But geez, I just don't think that there's going to be enough as of today or as of 2023.
Well, we only have a minute and a half before the end of this break, so I wanted to get to education. Can you stick around for 15 more minutes, or do we have to get you back to kind of deep dive onto where compromises could be for education? Because I know that you care about this a lot.
I mean, if I can come back to a talk, Ed, absolutely. I mean,
we'll do that. I will email you tonight, and we will get you back to talk about education more, because I know that you guys do a lot of work with that, and I think there is it's something that everyone can agree is important. And so this was super enlightening. I'm so happy we finally got this scheduled. Hopefully we can make it a regular thing, CJ. But CJ Safer is the president of the Institute for Reforming Government. We will link that website to today's show notes. But thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Enjoy post-budget. Enjoy the snow day.
Yes, exactly. Go sledding.
Yes. All right.
Bye, CJ. All right. When we come back, some Senate District 8 campaign strategy stuff. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. You are always welcome to join the conversation at 844-967-2789. I knew that we were going to run out of time with CJ. And
there's just so much to cover.
There's so much to cover. And we've had multiple coffees together. And it's really interesting. And I just really appreciate being able to have civil conversations with really smart people who just fundamentally, there's certain things as far as like funding things versus having more conservative spending that like he and I are never going to agree on, but we can also like talk about the things that matter, like education and stuff, and like what is a smarter way to prioritize that. And so I hopefully we can get him back regularly on the show, because I think having a different point of view is important.
It's critical.
And so
it's critical.
Did you have any reactions to the conversation we had with CJ?
Well, and I have never met CJ, and I didn't want to jump in the first time that we have him on as a guest. But one question I always want to ask conservatives who claim that they are all about small government is how is putting a politician into a woman's doctor's appointment small government? To me, that is government so small it fits in my uterus. And I find that annoying. And so I would just like someone to explain to me how that is being small government. And we can do the same thing with the way we kicked off the show about this anti-trans measure now in South Dakota. I don't see that as small government.
Yeah. Yes. And it's interesting because I think there is a certain strain of the Republican Party, I think, in the MAGA world of that cares more about social issues now than conservative fiscal spending. I wouldn't put CJ in there. I think certainly that it's small government. It's smart. It's less spending. But as far as I've read plenty about so many of the conservative and traditional conservative values that don't necessarily have a place in the MAGA world, that talks so much about the culture stuff that it's like, sometimes I think there are people who consider themselves conservatives that don't recognize themselves in that. So that's probably, see, this is why we need to have him on regularly, because I think there's so many different directions the conversation can go, that when we talk in a bubble and just talk to our assumptions about those people, it doesn't really help build compromise or understanding.
Well, and that's kind of the whole goal of your show. This show is to educate people and to present them with different sides of things, so we can all learn together and not have so much animosity. That doesn't get us anywhere.
And not necessarily always agree either, but at least not yell at each other
exactly.
In the process.
Exactly.
So, all right. Well, this was written about yesterday, but I think I've heard some rumblings of this for the past week. So We talk a lot about the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, but another very important race that not all of us get to vote in, but District 8, in this for the state Senate's District 8, there is a special election that it does have at least a Republican primary on Tuesday, and then the winner of that will go on to the general in April. But this is the background here, if you are not familiar, is there's a special election because longtime Republican State Senator Alberta Darling of River Hills retired in December. And so now what was a seat that clinched a supermajority for the state Senate for Republicans could potentially be flipped.
Yes.
Now, it's still unlikely. That still is a Republican-leaning district, but it is the north suburbs of Milwaukee, or specifically the north suburbs of Milwaukee, are trending towards moving away from MAGA Trumpism. And so of the three Republicans who are running, it's Janelle Branchon.
Who, by the way, just got the endorsement of former President Trump.
Oh, she did?
Yes, she did. Congratulations.
There you go. Did not know that.
Yeah.
That's good breaking news.
Yeah.
But it is also Representative Dan. Is it Knodel or Knodel?
I think it's Knodel.
I've heard both.
I will do a search.
Knodel is more fun to say. I'm just going to say it.
Well, then let's use that.
I mean, if we're really prioritizing my feelings and my linguistic preferences, Knodel's way more fun to say.
The heck with accuracy, we're going for amusement.
If Germantown and Thiensville Village President Van Mobley are also on the ballot, and the only Democrat running is Jody Habesh Sinikin. Is it Sinikin?
Yes.
Yes.
Sinikin, yep.
Sinikin. Jody Habesh Sinikin is the only Democrat running. And so, obviously, she's already... And so the point here that I want to get to is the ads that she's already running, despite having no competition in the primary. And so this is a seat that's important. While that, if the Democrats were to win this, certainly would not do anything for the majority that the Republicans have, but it does keep them from having a supermajority. So now, and I'm going to say it now, I don't like this strategy. I didn't like it when I heard about it in the fall when other states were doing this. And I don't love it now. It seems subtle right now. It's not so egregious, but it's a little like, you kind of feel like you're playing with fire. But the only Democrat in this running for the seat, Jody Habesh Sinikin, is running television advertisements ahead of Tuesday's primary. And they're talking about, instead of, they don't mention the other two candidates at all, the other two Republican candidates, it just mentions Janelle Branchon. And she, and then we just said she's gotten Trump's support. She kind of lost favor with Robin Voss after she endorsed Adam Steen in their race in the fall.
Yeah, that went down really well.
But she was one of the main election deniers in the state legislature over the last couple of years since the 2020 election. So let's just play the clip of the TV ad that's running right now.
She's just too conservative.
Janelle Branchon is the most conservative you can be when it comes to abortion.
Branchon wants to keep abortion illegal.
And she'll make no exceptions.
None.
She even sponsored a bill to defund Planned Parenthood.
Pro-Life Wisconsin named her Legislator of the Year.
But Jody Habesh Sinikin will fight to restore Wisconsin women's right to choose.
Jody knows our most personal decisions should never be in the hands of politicians.
Jody is the leader we need.
The leader we need.
So it's subtle. I would hear that, and especially in a general, like if this was after Tuesday, if I saw that ad, which I wouldn't because I don't live in that district.
Right.
That was not so dissimilar to Governor Evers' ads against Tim Michaels during the general last fall, right? Is like harping on abortion, harping on how conservative and out of touch, et cetera, et cetera. But the observation is that she and this campaign is specifically only highlighting how conservative Janelle Branchon is to potentially appeal to the more conservative voters to turn out for Branchon instead of the other two, seemingly because the assumption is that she might be easier to beat. Democrats, it might be easier to beat Janelle Branchon than Dan Knoedl. I'm saying it. I don't care. And this was approach that was used heavily, not so much here, but it was used heavily in the 2022 midterms. And it was because there was an assumption that the super MAGA candidates that kind of seemed a little kooky were going to be easier to beat in the general. And so this includes the Republican primaries for governor in Illinois, Michigan, Pennsylvania. And across the board, it was mixed results, right? Like it was playing with fire. And in certain places it worked, and in certain places it didn't. And I think just on a moral ground, I don't like it, if that is the intention. But it's also politics. And so if you play to win and this is the calculated risk, I'm not a campaign manager.
I just feel, because again, a vast majority of Wisconsinites want safe, legal abortions, with some maybe, you know, some want more restrictions than others, but the vast majority of state residents do not want to see it completely banned. And by highlighting that about Branchon, I think they are doing a service for the other candidates and are actually making the other candidates more palatable.
Oh, really?
Yes. All they're doing is highlighting how extreme she is, and not every Republican is that extreme.
But then it comes back to who votes in primaries, who votes in February primaries.
That's true.
You know, I mean, I was listening to Joe Zepecki on Up North News Radio this morning with Pat Kreitlow, and he was talking about how, like, if you want to feel like your vote matters in Wisconsin, no better time than to do it in February because there's such low turnout. So if there was ever a time that your vote has an outsized representation, it is in these middle of winter when it looks like that outside and people are like, yeah, I'm not going to go vote. I don't even know who any of these people are.
Right. It's crucial.
And it is crucial. And it's so many of the people who do show up are those of us who are paying such close attention, which we know, and no fault of their own. I mean, you're busy, right? There's a lot of people who don't necessarily have the time or the bandwidth or the attention span to follow all this stuff. And so I hear you. And I think in a general, you're right. But I think that comes back to why they think if they can bolster a very conservative base to remind them of how conservative she is, it could potentially get her through the primary. And then all those other more moderate Republicans you're talking about are like, yeah, I'm not voting for her.
Right, right. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, but I feel you about feeling morally uncomfortable about this. And just and just the whole tactic, because it feels dirty. And we all like to believe that our side is the one that takes the higher ground. But I don't know that there is higher ground anymore.
No. And, you know, it's interesting. Oh, God, what was this in reference to? Oh, I saw John Fetterman went back to the hospital this week. Did you see that?
Oh, this week.
This week. And I was scrolling through Twitter, and so I haven't had time to actually get more information about it. But one of the very first responses to the tweet that I saw that announced it was one comment was like, the responses to this are horrific, meaning the replies to the original tweet. And then someone responded to that person saying, I just scrolled through and like 90% of them look like they're prayers. What are you talking about? And then someone said, this is the difference between both sides. If this was a Republican, you wouldn't be seeing this in the responses. You'd only be seeing people saying that they wish them well. And someone responded to that being like, are you kidding me? And they listed off different times where, you know, and granted, I think when Trump got COVID, I would say there was a lot of people who didn't have a lot of thoughts and prayers for him on the left. And so it's like, is, as a group, no one ever has the moral high ground. Individuals do. And so you can kind of think of how you think, but there is some low blows on both sides of the aisle
no
when it
doubt.
Comes to how tribalistic you get and what you're willing to say about something that someone that you've dehumanized enough to just be able to hope that they don't come out of the hospital. So, all right, well, we're going to lighten it up. This has been a lot of politics. So we're going to lighten up with our favorite Twitterer in chief, who, how many engineers does it take to stroke Elon's ego? 80, apparently. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair, and he is Elon Musk. No, Elon Musk is not here, but geez Louise.
It's really something.
It's really something. And because I love a good light bulb joke, I will reiterate if you're just joining us and did not hear my button at the end of the last segment. How many engineers does it take to stroke or boost Elon Musk's ego? Apparently 80, because that is how many people who were on the job to make sure that Elon Musk's tweets were seen by everybody.
He's so fragile.
Oh, so I am not the first one. And these jokes aren't even, like, I don't even have jokes compared to... I want to play the clip and then we'll give a little bit more background on the story. But right now, because Trevor Noah has left The Daily Show, there's rotating weekly hosts for The Daily Show right now. And this week is Sarah Silverman. And she had this to say about the situation.
Let's begin with Elon Musk, Twitter CEO and man who has definitely scissored a robot. If you thought your Twitter feed was especially flooded with Elon's tweets this week, you weren't alone. Apparently, Elon's tweets weren't going viral enough, so he pressured his engineers to design a special algorithm just for his tweets so that everyone would see them first. Because it behooves all of us to be privy to the fresh and original insights of the richest man in the world. Really, though, this is just the most pathetic thing I've ever heard. I don't understand how someone can have 15 kids and still be an incel.
Boom.
I feel bad for him. I really do. This man paid $44 billion to get the same insecurities that I have for free.
So what had happened was... during the Super Bowl, he realized that, and during the Super Bowl, which, reminder, he was sitting next to Rupert Murdoch.
Oh, right. That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Just take that piece of information and do with it
for what it's worth.
As you will.
Yeah.
And he had a tweet about the Super Bowl, and it ended up being less popular than Joe Biden's tweet about the Super Bowl. And so I guess James Musk, who's a Twitter employee, and I guess Elon's Nepo cousin.
Oh, swell.
Not to be confused with the Nepo baby. But he sent the equivalent of a you up message to the company Slack at 2:36 a.m. in the morning, asking for help with a high urgency problem.
Oh, my goodness.
And so by Monday afternoon, 80 employees had tweaked Twitter's algorithm to boost Musk's tweets by over 1,000x, bottle feeding them to users. So I guess this is from Morning Brew, and I guess there might be some, like, partially justified. I guess the social media company's engineers estimated his tweets were showing up in feeds less often than they should have, but 1,000x is maybe a little bit of an overcorrection.
I just find it so interesting that you can be that wealthy and that influential and have such a thin skin. It just is mind-boggling to me. Mind-boggling.
But I feel like, I think to a certain extent that is often what drives people too, especially men. But I think having a chip on your shoulder, and I think the insecurity, and I think this I'm going to prove something, like, fire in your belly instead of being a secure person. Because I think often, like, a very secure person doesn't necessarily have that same thing to prove. And so I'm not going to say that super secure people can't be wildly successful, because obviously they can. But I think it would surprise us, not that I know a ton of the richest people in the country, but when you think about people who gravitate towards working to have a ton of money or a ton of power, whether it be political power or power in the business world or whatever, like, I do think that there's something that comes from a deep insecurity that's overcompensated with gravitas and I'll show you, and why don't I have the respect that I deserve yet? And he's just on such a, I mean, he bought one of the most popular social media platforms in the world and has now pulled him, like, prior to this, he was kind of annoying on Twitter to some people. Some people obviously love him, but I think he still had a lot of people's respect as far as Tesla and SpaceX and stuff like that. But I think his handling of this so far, he's just opened himself up to such ridicule that it's probably only fueling him more now as to, like, prove it to people. I don't know.
I think you make a good point about that being having that chip and feeling like you have something to prove. I can see where that would be very, very motivational. And so I don't discount that that's part of what keeps him getting up in the morning. At the same time, Elon, buy a new epidermis and get over it. Toughen up. Jeez. Yoy.
The incel joke is pretty great, though.
And for people who don't know what that means.
Means involuntarily celibate.
Yes.
And it's a name that some men give themselves, but it's basically men who are not having sex involuntarily because women do not want to have sex with
because
them.
Because they're repulsed by them.
And and, you know, they're like the people who are usually trolling people in their basement and on social media and telling women how ugly and awful they are. That comes from a place of deep, deep self-hatred. So there's your lesson. There's a new vocab word for you today.
Word of the day.
All right. Well, I cannot wait. When we come back, I don't know if you heard, but I missed this in Ron Johnson's re-election campaign, that the only reason he was running was to protect and advocate for the vaccine injured. I missed that in his political campaign ads. I don't know if you saw that. But
the months of ads.
But Ron Johnson is totally here in the next segment. Like, it's really him.
The real him.
It's not a comedian. Doing impersonation.
We would never do that.
But he is going to be here to answer our questions as far as where we missed the re-election campaign and why this is his sole focus. So you're not going to want to miss this. I promise you. I promise you don't want to miss this. Stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin. I told you I was troubled.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.